Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program for March 19, 2019, which is in our calendar, the 12th of Adar 2, 5779. I am Walter Bingham, and pleased that you invited me into your home or car or wherever you are listening. Today's program includes a most fascinating university debate that you should not miss. I also bring you another part of the Tova Mordechai story, which I'm sure will keep you tight to your chair, but I begin with the Malka Leifer child sex abuse case, which seems to be going on without an end. It began in 2003, when for a period until 2008, Malka Leifer, the principal of the Adas Orthodox Jewish Religious Girls' School in Melbourne, Australia, was suspected of child sex abuse. Following accusations by several of her former students, an investigation was launched, which resulted in 74 criminal charges against Leifer. Within 24 hours of the decision to litigate, this skilled sexual predator, who held Australian and Israeli citizenship, fled to Israel with her 8 children. According to police, some members of her Adas community are now being investigated for facilitating Leifer's sudden departure. In Israel, she settled in Emmanuel, a small, obscure, closed Orthodox settlement with an anti-establishment philosophy, where she offered her services to teach and allegedly again molested her charges. The Australian government requested her extradition, and she was first arrested in 2014. But after legal argument that she was mentally unfit to be extradited, Leifer was put under house arrest and subsequently released from all restrictions. Following private investigators' reports commissioned by the Jewish Community Watch that deals with child sex abuse and backed by hundreds of pictures showing that Leifer was leading a normal life and that mental illness was pretense, she was rearrested in February 2018 for feigning illness and obstructing justice, and remained in custody pending the result of extradition hearings, which have dragged on since 2014 and are still not concluded. The driving force behind the push for Leifer's extradition are the three Sapper sisters, now in their early 30s, Dassi Ehrlich, Nicole Meyer, and Ellie Sapper. Hear the rest after the break.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Here is Walter Bingham.
They were students at the Adas school and were sexually abused by Leifer. They were shy, submissive, and in their community had no interaction with the outside world. No TV, no mobile phones, not even interaction with other Orthodox children. That was the regime of the Adas community. Still today, many religious leaders in the Haredi community in Australia and in Israel believe that such matters should not be aired in public or adjudicated in a secular court, and that the sisters bring shame on their community. This week, however, the sisters were the central figures in a demonstration outside the Central Court of Jerusalem, where yet another extradition hearing took place with another psychiatrist for the defense, giving evidence. The result will not be known until later this year after further hearings. This case has now dragged on for years, possibly due to the interference of the Deputy Health Minister Yaakov Litzman, who is now being investigated by police on suspicion that he intervened in the Leifer case by having conferred with the psychiatrist to exert influence on the psychiatric evaluation so that Lifer should be deemed unfit for extradition. There are now voices calling for Litzmann's resignation. The kingpin of the demonstration this week was Manny Wax, who is himself a victim of sexual abuse in Australia and has been an activist from the beginning to get Lifer to justice.
The story is continuing today here at the Jerusalem Central Court, where Mrs. Lifer has been examined as to her fitness to be extradited to Australia to stand trial for her many, many sexual offences. There's a crowd gathering outside the court, about 150, who are demonstrating in favour of extradition.
Here is Mr. Manny Wax.
I want to read out a personal letter, a message of support from Premier of Victoria, Mr. Daniel Andrews.
Victoria is the Australian state in which Melbourne is situated.
Ellie and Nicole, I want to commend you on your courage throughout this process. You have endured an arduous and seemingly endless ordeal, and the bravery and spirit you have shown is truly remarkable. As you know, we have been very clear in our representations that we expect Miss Lifer to be extradited in order to face the scrutiny of this criminal justice system in Australia. I am hopeful the Israeli justice system moves quickly to deliver this outcome, an outcome that you and other victims deserve. Please know that we stand with you in your fight for justice. Rosh Ha'ir shel Victoria, Mr. Daniel Andrews.
Another message of support.
From the Executive Council of Australian Jewry President, Mr. Anton Block. The ECAJ, the elected peaky representative body of the Australian Jewish community, stands in complete solidarity with those who are calling for the immediate extradition from Israel to Australia of Malka Lifer to face 74 charges of child sexual abuse. The continual delays in the case since the Israeli authorities arrested Lifer in 2014 are intolerable. An Israeli police undercover operation last year concluded that Lifer has been faking her claim that she is mentally unfit to stand trial. It is heartening to note that the Jerusalem District Court on February 17th rejected Lifer's application to be released from jail into home detention and her lawyer's claims that her life would be in danger and that she would suffer irreparable damage by staying in jail for the duration of legal proceedings. The court ruled that Lifer will remain in jail in Israel on remand until the extradition proceedings are concluded. We are deeply troubled by grave allegations that Deputy Health Minister Yaakov Litzman met with Jerusalem's district psychiatrist, Dr. Jacob Charnas, to pressure him into issuing a false assessment for Lifer in support of her claim that she should not be extradited to Australia because she is unfit to stand trial due to her mental state. We understand Israel's anti-corruption unit is now conducting an investigation into the conduct of the Deputy Health Minister. He should stand down from his position while the investigation is underway. If it is found that there is any truth to the allegations, the Deputy Minister should be dismissed and prosecuted for interfering in the administration of justice. Representatives of the ECAJ met on February 18 with the Australian Ambassador to Israel and again conveyed our view that the extradition of Lifer to face justice without delay is a matter of the highest concern for the Australian Jewish community. We are grateful to the Ambassador and to the Australian Government for the assistance being offered to child sexual abuse survivors. The sympathies of the Australian Jewish community are overwhelmingly with the survivors. We wish them continued strength and determination and commend them for their valiant pursuit of justice, their dignity in the face of delays in the extradition trial and allegations of impropriety by various officials are a great credit to our community. The Zionist Federation, Jeremy Liebler, wrote a powerful message also and expect the justice to prevail.
Here is Nicole Meyer, one of the abused, speaking on behalf of all three sisters.
We just wanted to say to everyone here, thank you so much for turning up in support of us. Thank you so much for letting us know that we are not alone. We feel your support. It is because of your support that we can continue fighting for justice and ensuring that this abuser is not on the streets anymore. And while we're doing that, ensure that every single boy and girl out there are safe. And we're doing this for everyone, not just for ourselves. So thank you for being here today.
A very brief update on today's hearing. Today there was a psychiatrist, the third psychiatrist on behalf of the defence, who clearly states, according to his professional and personal opinion, that Malka Lifer is not fit to come to Australian courts and face trial.
What was very upsetting for us were a series of Facebook posts that were found under his name stating his personal opinions about Mark Khalifa and about us, the victim, that he doesn't believe us and that we're not religious enough and therefore we don't deserve justice. And all this was brought out in court today to show that really no credibility should be given to this psychiatrist, his report that he wrote in 2015. So we really hope that going forward, any psychiatrist further will be credible and will be used according to the law, and we hope to see justice.
The municipality of Jerusalem was represented by its deputy mayor, Fleur Hassan Nahum, who had this to say.
The country that I love does not protect sex offenders and pedophiles. What we have at the moment is a serious mismanagement of the health ministry run by somebody who wants to protect the name of his group of people more than he wants to protect the people in this country. The group is more important than the individuals. And the minute there's an individual who speaks out against the group, you're no longer part of the group, and therefore you don't deserve our defense. This is a warped situation that we need to change. Litzman needs to resign. This is a man that is hugging sex offenders. This is a man that is protecting pedophiles. Why? Because the name of his group is more important than the people in his group. The minute the people speak out, you're no longer part of the group. And then the victims become the people who are to blame for their own situation. This is a warped situation. This is not the Israel we love. And this is not a banana republic. He has to resign.
The next speaker was Dr. Jacqueline, the Vice President of the Australian Jewish Medical Federation.
As an organization of Australian Jewish doctors, we support all victims of child sexual abuse, not only in this case, but in all cases. We support the Australian government's request for Mark Khalifa to be extradited to Australia to face justice.
Khalifa back to Australia! Khalifa back to Australia! Khalifa back to Australia!
You're carrying a Hebrew placard with some eyes. What does it say?
The names of the sister, that's in Chama Ve'eli. You are not alone. We're with you.
Thank you very much. And now your name.
My name is Orit Suliciano. I'm the executive director for the Association of the Rape Crisis Centers in Israel. We're in contact with them, and we fight against sexual violence in the country. I mean, our lawyer is to help all the legal aspects of this issue, and we think it's a scandal that so many years Khalifa is escaping trial and having our deputy minister of health being a suspect of having a failed psychiatric.
But apart from deputy health minister Litzman, if two different psychiatrists testify and say the same thing, in other words, that this woman is not fit for extradition to stand trial, isn't there?
This woman is accused of doing severe sex crimes against children. It was even written that there was this suspicion started in Israel, and then she went to Australia, and it continued there. Just a few months ago, private investigators videoed how she's actually having a normal life, going shopping, going to the post, and she's very sophisticated, and she has the community protecting her. This is horrible.
Who are the community that are protecting
her? It's a religious community. She lived in Emmanuel. I don't know who specific other person, but 11 years escaping, standing in front of court, going back to Israel.
But she herself is a Haredi woman, isn't she?
And I will tell you something which is very, very sad. In the Haredi community, on one hand, there is growing awareness today in Israel to the issue of sexual assault, and even us in the rape crisis centers, there's a lot of work being done there. But on the other hand, they like not to tell the bad things outside and to keep everything inside the community in the issue of sexual assault. So if you keep the secret, then more and more children will be hurt. And we, us in the rape crisis centers, we meet many, many children who are already grown up, but when they were children, they were abused, and the code of silence there prevented them from getting help.
The assembled crowd stayed for quite some time, chanting for the resignation of Deputy Health Minister Yaakov Litzman, and also, of course, for Mark Khalifa to be extradited to Australia.
Khalifa back to Australia! Khalifa back to Australia! Khalifa back to Australia!
Pedophilia is a universal crime that occurs all over the world and goes back to the beginning of known history. There were times and cultures where marriage to girls as young as 8 was openly practiced. I believe that even today in some countries, they betroth their underage girls to older men for a substantial settlement in money or kind, but individual cases were little known because communication to the outside world was practically non-existent. But in today's digital age, we learn of everything in real time and hence of the astonishing numbers of child abuse even in the Western world. This repulsive practice is often found in the Catholic Church and often among men and women teachers. Can it ever be eradicated?
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show. And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Sometimes something happens that should make the headlines, but for all sorts of reasons is overlooked or even deliberately ignored by most of the media. It could be because just at the same time there is a major disaster somewhere in the world, or a great ceremonial event is taking place, or even the time when an election result is declared in one or another country and is analyzed in great detail. All are news stories that, as we say in journalism, have legs, in other words, can be milked for some time and will therefore attract advertising in the various news outlets. But sometimes there are political reasons to prevent publicity, as in the story that I want to share with you today. A story that was, in my opinion, if not the greatest, but certainly one of the most noteworthy. And although it happened in 2010, with a few historical adjustments, it could just as well have happened yesterday. Student debates at the major universities in the US and UK have often caused reverberations far beyond the debating chamber, as for instance the famous Oxford Union debate in 1939, whether to fight for king and country. There was a debate at the prestigious Student Union of the University of Cambridge in England, the equivalent of a senior Ivy League in the USA, and the motion was, "This House believes that Israel is a rogue state." Nothing really surprising in today's climate, and it was expected to be another hostile event demonizing the Jewish state. Proposing the motion was Lauren Booth, the anti-Israel activist, convert to Islam, passenger on a flotilla to break the Gaza blockade, and sister-in-law of former Prime Minister Tony Blair. Also speaking for the motion was Mark MacDonald, the founder of the group Labour Friends of Palestine, and Gabriel Latner, a 19-year-old second-year law student from Toronto. Opposing the motion were Ran Gidor, the Israeli embassy's counselor for political affairs, Shiraz Maher, a former Islamic extremist, and Rob Mindell, an ex-president of Cambridge University's Jewish Society. As a result of Gabriel Latner's speech, remember, he was one of the proposers for the motion that Israel is a rogue state. As a result of his speech, it was decisively defeated with 74% of the votes opposing it. So despite losing it, he won it for Israel. The Jerusalem Post's London correspondent Johnny Paul reports that Latner, who comes from a Reconstructionist Jewish background and has been to Israel several times, responded to a general student union request for members to participate in the debate, and he was invited to appear for the proposers of the motion. Latner delivered a 10-minute speech to the 800-strong audience that defied all expectation. Interestingly, he was not required to submit it in advance. You will be spellbound by the text, which I have decided to read here in full. Quote, "This is a war of ideals, and the other speakers here tonight are rightfully idealists. I am not. I'm a realist. I'm here to win. I have a single goal this evening, to have at least a plurality of you walk out of the yes door. I face a singular challenge. Most, if not all of you, have already made up your minds." This issue is too polarizing for the vast majority of you not to already have a set opinion. I'd be willing to bet that half of you strongly support the motion and half of you strongly oppose it. I want to win, and we're destined for a tie. I'm tempted to do what my fellow speakers are going to do, simply rehash every bad thing the Israeli government has ever done in an attempt to satisfy those of you who agree with them. And perhaps even guilt one of you, rare undecided, into voting for the proposition, or more accurately, against Israel. It would be so easy to twist the meaning and significance of international laws to make Israel look like a criminal state, but that's been done to death. It would be easier still to play to your sympathy with personalized stories of Palestinian suffering, and they can give very elegant speeches on those issues. But the truth is that treating people badly, whether they're your citizens or an occupied nation, does not make a state rogue. If it did, Canada, the US, and Australia would all be rogue states based on how they treat their indigenous populations. Britain's treatment of the Irish would easily qualify them to wear this sobriquet. These arguments, while emotionally satisfying, lack intellectual rigor. More importantly, I don't think we can win with those arguments. It won't change the numbers. Half of you will agree with them, half of you won't. So I'm going to try something different, something a little unorthodox. I'm going to try and convince the diehard Zionists and Israel supporters here tonight to vote for the proposition. By the end of my speech, I will have presented 5 pro-Israel arguments that show Israel is, if not a rogue state, then at least roguish. Let me be clear. I'll not be arguing that Israel is bad. I will not be arguing that it doesn't deserve to exist. I won't be arguing that it behaves worse than every other country. I will only be arguing that Israel is rogue. The word rogue has come to have exceptionally damning connotations. But the word itself is value neutral. The Oxford English Dictionary defines rogue as aberrant, anomalous, misplaced, occurring especially in isolation, at an unexpected place or time, while a dictionary from a far greater institution gives this definition, behaving in ways that are not expected or not normal, often in a destructive way. These definitions and others center on the idea of anomaly, the unexpected or uncommon. Using this definition, a rogue state is one that acts in an unexpected, uncommon, or aberrant manner. A state that behaves exactly like Israel. The first argument is statistical. The fact that Israel is a Jewish state alone makes it anomalous enough to be dubbed a rogue state. There are 195 countries in the world. Some are Christian, some Muslim, some are secular. Israel is the only country in the world that is Jewish, or, to speak mathmo for a moment, the chance of any randomly chosen state being Jewish is 0.0051%. In comparison, the chance of a UK lotto ticket winning at least £10 is 0.017%, more than twice as likely. Israel's Jewishness is a statistical aberration. The second argument concerned Israel's humanitarianism, in particular Israel's response to a refugee crisis. Not the Palestinian refugee crisis, for I'm sure that the other speakers will cover that, but the issue of Darfurian refugees. Everyone knows that what happened and is still happening in Darfur is genocide, whether or not the UN and the Arab League will call it such. There has been a mass exodus from Darfur as the oppressed seek safety. They have not had much luck. Many have gone north to Egypt, where they are treated despicably. The brave make a run through the desert in a bid to make it to Israel. Not only do they face the natural threats of the Sinai, they are also used for target practice by the Egyptian soldiers patrolling the border. Why would they take the risk? Because in Israel they are treated with compassion, they are treated as the refugees they are, and perhaps Israel's cultural memory of genocide is to blame. The Israeli government has even gone so far as to grant several hundred Darfurian refugees citizenship. This alone sets Israel apart from the rest of the world. But the real point of distinction is this. The IDF sends out soldiers and medics to patrol the Egyptian border. They're sent looking for refugees attempting to cross into Israel, not to send them back into Egypt, but to save them from dehydration, heat exhaustion, and Egyptian bullets. Compare that to the US's reaction to illegal immigration across the border with Mexico. The American government has arrested private individuals for giving water to border crossers who were dying of thirst. And here, the Israeli government is sending out its soldiers to save illegal immigrants. To call that sort of behavior anomalous is an understatement. My third argument is that the Israeli government engages in an activity which the rest of the world shuns. It negotiates with terrorists. Forget the late PLO chairman Yasser Arafat, a man who died with blood all over his hands. They're in the process of negotiating with terrorists as we speak. Yasser Abed Rabo is one of the lead PLO negotiators who's been sent to the peace talks with Israel. Abed Rabo also used to be a leader of the PFLP, an organization of freedom fighters that, under Abed Rabo's leadership, engaged in such freedom-promoting activities as killing 22 Israeli high school students, and the Israeli government is sending delegates to sit at the table with this man and talk about peace. And the world applauds. You would never see the Spanish government in peace talks with the leaders of ETA. The British government would never negotiate with Thomas Murphy. And if President Obama were to sit down and talk about peace with Osama bin Laden, the world would view this as insanity. But Israel can do the exact same thing and earn international praise in the process. That is the dictionary definition of rogue, behaving in a way that is unexpected or not normal. Another part of dictionary definition is behavior or activity occurring at an unexpected place or time. When you compare Israel to its regional neighbors, it becomes clear just how roguish Israel is. And here is the fourth argument. Israel has a better human rights record than any of its neighbors. At no point in history has there ever been a liberal democratic state in the Middle East except for Israel. Of all the countries in the Middle East, Israel is the only one where the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community enjoys even a small measure of equality. In Kuwait, Lebanon, Oman, Qatar, and Syria, homosexual conduct is punishable by flogging, imprisonment, or both. But homosexuals there get off pretty lightly compared to their counterparts in Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen, who are put to death. Israeli homosexuals can adopt, openly serve in the army, enter civil unions, and are protected by exceptionally strong-worded anti-discrimination legislation. Beats a death sentence. In fact, it beats America.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American Time, 7 a.m. Israeli Time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
In fact, it beats America. Israel's protection of its citizens' civil liberties has earned international recognition. Freedom House is an NGO that releases an annual report on democracy and civil liberties in each of the 195 countries in the world. It ranks each country as free, partly free, or not free. In the Middle East, Israel is the only country that has earned designation as a free country. Not surprising given the level of freedom afforded to citizens in, say, Lebanon, a country designated as partly free, where there are laws against reporters criticizing not only the Lebanese government, but the Syrian regime as well. Iran is a country given the rating of not free, putting it alongside China, Zimbabwe, North Korea, and Myanmar. In Iran, there is a special press court which prosecutes journalists for such heinous offenses as criticizing the Ayatollah, reporting on stories damaging the foundations of the Islamic Republic, using suspicious, i.e. Western, sources, or insulting Islam. Iran is the world leader in terms of jailed journalists, with 39 reporters that we know of in prison as of 2009. They also kicked out almost every Western journalist during the 2009 election. I guess we can't really expect more from a theocracy, which is what most countries in the Middle East are, theocracies and autocracies. But Israel is the sole, the only, the rogue democracy out of every country in the Middle East. Only in Israel do anti-government protests and reporting go unquashed and uncensored. I have one final argument. The last nail in the opposition's coffin, and it's sitting right across the aisle. Mr. Ran Guido's presence here is the all evidence any of us should need to confidently call Israel a rogue state. For those of you who have never heard of him, Mr. Guido is a political counselor attached to the Israeli embassy in London. He's the guy the Israeli government sent to represent them in the UN. He knows what he's doing, and he's here tonight. And it's incredible. Consider for a moment what his presence here means. The Israeli government has signed off to allow one of their senior diplomatic representatives to participate in a debate on their very legitimacy. That's remarkable. Do you think for a minute that any other country would do the same? If the Yale University Debating Society were to have a debate where the motion was, "This House believes Britain is a racist, totalitarian state that has done irrevocable harm to the peoples of the world," that Britain would allow any of its officials to participate? No. Would China participate in a debate about the status of Taiwan? Never. And there's no chance in hell that an American government official would ever be permitted to argue in a debate concerning its treatment of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. But Israel has sent Mr. Ran Guido to argue tonight against a 19-year-old law student who is entirely unqualified to speak on the issue at hand. Every government in the world should be laughing at Israel right now because it forgot rule number one. You never add credence to crackpots by engaging with them. It's the same reason you won't see Stephen Hawking or Richard Dawkins debate David Icke, but Israel is doing precisely that, once again behaving in a way that is unexpected or not normal, behaving like a rogue state. That's five arguments that have been directed at the supporters of Israel. But I have a minute or two left, and here's an argument for all of you. Israel willfully and forcefully disregards international law. In 1981, Israel destroyed Ozirak, Saddam Hussein's nuclear bomb lab. Every government in the world knew that Hussein was building a bomb, and they did nothing, except for Israel. Yes, in doing so, they broke international law and custom. But they also saved us all from a nuclear Iraq. That rogue action should earn Israel a place of respect in the eyes of all freedom-loving peoples. But it hasn't. But tonight, while you listen to us prattle on, I want you to remember something. While you're here, Khomeini's Iran is working towards that bomb. And if you're honest with yourself, you know that Israel is the only country that can and will do something about it. Israel will, out of necessity, act in a way that is not the norm. And you'd better hope that they do it in a destructive manner. Any sane person would rather a rogue Israel than a nuclear Iran. After the speech, the Cambridge Union Society became embroiled in controversy following an alleged verbal abuse of Lauren Booth by Lattner. According to Lattner's account, the incident began when he told Booth that he was Jewish and had volunteered with the Israeli army. He believes this information contributed to her unease with him speaking for the proposition. On Booth's request, Lattner was moved from first to second speaker for the proposition, and before getting up to speak, he turned to Booth and said, "I'm going to nail you to the effing wall up there." Booth later complained about Lattner's comment, and he was then requested to apologize to her. When he refused, Lattner was escorted off the premises and told that he was banned for life for disrupting a union event and verbally abusing a guest on the society's premises. In response, he decided to appeal that decision to the union's review committee. The substance of Lattner's appeal hinged on his contention that his actions in no way disrupted the event, do not constitute verbal abuse, and were not sufficient ground for a lifetime ban from the union. Moreover, he believes that the chairman lacked the authority to ban him and that he failed to conduct the presidential investigation before imposing a penalty, as the union constitution stipulates. Lattner said, "I'm not saying I acted without fault. Did I offend Mrs. Booth? I have no doubt that I did. But I don't know if what Mrs. Booth found offensive was my private comment to her or the fact that I actually nailed her to the wall in my public speech. I can guess, though. I think this is about weighing my and everyone else's right to free speech against any indignity Mrs. Booth suffered. If the Chamber of the Union isn't going to be a sanctuary for free speech, I don't want my membership back." Meanwhile, the union has also come under criticism for the content of the debate itself, which was described in pro-Israeli media as an important PR achievement and has received complaints that the debate was intentionally pro-Israeli. The president of the Palestinian Society commented that inviting Gabriel Lattner to speak on behalf of what was essentially the pro-Palestinian position was not going to be conducive to a balanced debate, and the Arab and Islamic societies, among others, asked, "How can the union justify inviting a speaker who clearly lacks any credibility to speak on behalf of the proposition?" To which the union's president replied that the union does not vet speakers' speeches and that, quote, "The motion was not asking, is this house pro or anti-Israel? It was asking whether Israel is a rogue state, which Gabriel Lattner argued exactly according to the motion. So he was not arguing for the wrong side." What clever arguments. It shows us up as a light to the nations. And now for the continuation of last week's Tova Mordechai story. She was born Jewish, but brought up in a strict, sect-like Christian community, where she rose to become even a prophetess, not priestess, as said last week. But her Jewish soul nagged her.
And she whispered to me and she said, "Do you know what day it was today?" I said, "No, Margaret, for us it was a regular, ordinary day." She said it was Yom Kippur. I looked at her, I said, "How do you know that?" Now, I knew there was such a day as the Day of Atonement. It's mentioned briefly in the Christian Bible. And I was taught this was the day that Jews asked God to forgive them their sins. I was also taught, poor Jews, they only have one day to ask God to forgive them their sin. So I looked at my sister and I said, "Synagogue? How do you know that there's a synagogue here? I'd been in the city of Nottingham for 2 years. It didn't even occur to me to think about a Jew or a synagogue." She said, "Hey, didn't know. It turned out literally a 5-minute walk away from our college was an Orthodox synagogue." Then I looked at my sister, who was the same complexion as myself, and I said, "Margaret, didn't they look at you and say that you're a Gentile?" "No, there was crowds of people there. You can't believe how many people were there. And anyway, you want to know? There's even Jews with blonde hair." How did she get there? Because from work, she'd seen all the Jews going to the synagogue, and in her lunch break, she decided to go and see what happened. She said she thought there was a war or something terrible happened in Israel. Remember, we had no radio or television or newspapers. So she goes in and asks, you know, "Did something terrible happen? What happened?" "No," they said, "today is Yom Kippur." So that's how she knew. I went to my room, and I will never forget that day. All of a sudden, all I could think was, it was Yom Kippur. All the Jews were in synagogue, and you weren't there. Together with these words that seemed to spring from nowhere in my mind, it like released in the very gut of my being such a deep feeling of sadness, like I'd never felt such sadness before. So much so, I remember literally clenching my fists and making my arms rigid by my side. And with all the strength I could muster inside, I told myself, so what? So what if all the Jews were in synagogue and I wasn't there? I wasn't supposed to be there. And what on earth have the Jews got to do with me? It's not my business. Try as I might, no matter how hard I tried to push these words and these feelings away from me, they seemed to just hammer me back. Well, I was only 18 years old. I thought this was so strange, I was obviously embarrassed to share it with anyone. So I was like panicking inside of myself to get rid of these thoughts and these feelings. It took about 2 or 3 days, and I forgot about it. Several weeks went by.
The system signals that I have to end the program, but next week, God willing, I hope to bring you the conclusion of the Tova Mordechai story and more from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world, including my thoughts about certain aspects of American policy today. Until then, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a good weekend. Please don't forget that your elderly neighbor may be lonely or might need some help. Goodbye.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.